Welcome to the Guy Who Knows a Guy podcast. I'm your host, Michael Whitehouse. Today we'll be speaking with Jack Solomon, the Rotary District Governor for District 7980, which comprises the southern half of Connecticut from border to border. For reasons we'll discuss, this year's governors were known as the Aloha Governors, but the unexpected historic events of 2020 remind us that Aloha means both hello and goodbye. As a passionate Rotarian myself, I always enjoy talking about the basics of Rotary, but this interview really got fun around 10 minutes in when Jack talked a bit about himself and the private island he owns. Turns out private islands are a lot more affordable than you might think and a little more complex to live on. Be sure to listen all the way through. We have some fun. So let's get started. Hello, so I'm here today with Jack Solomon. Jack is the district governor for Rotary District 7980. How are you today, Jack?
I'm great. Looking forward to this.
Awesome. Yeah, so tell us a little bit about yourself and a bit about Rotary, and then we'll get to that island in a moment.
Okay. So I've been governor of our Rotary District here in Southern Connecticut. 57 Rotary clubs, over 2,000 members. And each one of those clubs helps their community by doing service, looking for ways to make their community better. So the district extends all the way from Greenwich to Stonington, as far north as Danbury and Newtown. 57 clubs serving more than 60 communities. So some people ask, well, what is Rotary? And my answer is there are three things. So one is fellowship and friendship to each other and to the people in their community and around the world. Service to their community, to their state, and around the world. And a way of helping others, which Rotary calls the four-way test. For the things we do, is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build goodwill and better friendship? And is it beneficial to all concerned? That's kind of the code that we live by. So I've been governor since last July 1, and it started out and it was pretty tame. Well, a governor goes and visits 57 Rotary clubs, and he helps the clubs, you know, in whatever way he can. But it's really up to the clubs to do what they do. They give scholarships, they provide help to food banks, build playscapes, do lots of things to help. They also raise money with fundraisers to be able to provide money for their community. So our international, every year Rotary has an international convention. And it happens in June usually. And our convention was going to be in Hawaii in June. And we were called the Aloha Governors. Aloha for Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
So My wife Jan and I were looking forward to going to Hawaii, but a virus happened on our way to being Aloha Governors, and we became the COVID Governors. Not quite as nice.
Well, remember, Aloha does mean both hello and goodbye.
And goodbye. That's true. Yeah, my wife and I have relatives in Hawaii, so we've been there a lot. So for us, missing Hawaii, I mean, it was disappointing, but we've been there before. A lot of the other governors have never been there.
Mm-hmm.
So this virus has totally disrupted our lives, as you know, because it's probably disrupted your life, and it's disrupted our Rotary clubs. You know, Rotary typically clubs meet every week, you know, together. We haven't been doing that because of this virus. So what did we do? We the clubs in our district in Southern Connecticut. Well, every club is giving money to their food bank because a lot of people are having trouble getting food because there's so many unemployed now. So So the clubs were already giving money to food banks, but we got some more money to allow them to give even more. So it became obvious that there was a strong need for personal protection equipment, you know, masks, gowns, stuff like that, in our communities as well as hospitals, you know, like in nursing homes and the EMS people and the fire and the police, they all needed protective equipment or they would be getting the virus also. And so we've enabled each of our 57 clubs to provide masks to first responders, to nursing homes, and to many other groups, visiting nurses. One of our members in Connecticut, Ted Rossi, has enabled this because Ted actually is in the lumber business. And he does, part of his business is in China. And so in January, when he saw that, well, A, that his business wasn't going to do much because of the virus, but he also had a skill, logistics in China. And so he set about getting masks, bringing masks to the U.S., both the flat surgical masks and KN95, more medical type masks. And so he has allowed us to give 60,000 masks through our various Rotary clubs to organizations in their town. You know, and again, a lot of it is EMS people, nursing homes, and others. So 60,000 masks, that's a lot of masks. And a lot of people are very grateful, a lot of organizations. I keep getting letters or emails, not so much letters, emails from organizations saying how important it was to them to have access to masks that they were having trouble getting in other ways. And it's because Ted had a skill, he had a logistics skill. He's not an expert in masks or in even in medical stuff, but he knew how to organize and get people involved. So in total, our Rotary District has provided over $200,000 of support for food, food banks, for protective equipment, and other things through all our 57 clubs. So $200,000, you know, it's a lot for us, you know, maybe not so much in the grand scheme of things, but for every one of our towns, it means a lot to have that money available.
And it sounds like one of the big things that happened there was that Rotary was a source of connecting resources. You know, that there was someone, if he had a connection in China, but no money to buy anything with it, it wouldn't do any good. If you had Rotary clubs with money and ready to do something, but no connection to the PPE in China, wouldn't do any good. But by everyone being Rotary together, it was able to maximize the effectiveness and to really mobilize the desire to help and the ability to help of 57 clubs and hundreds of members across all of Southern Connecticut.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, it's actually over 2,000 members.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and you're exactly right.
Mobilize.
And that's one of the keys in Rotary. And, you know, as we've gone through this COVID thing, you know, because we always felt our connection was, well, we get together at meetings and we connect at meetings. And one of the things we've learned from the COVID thing is that our connection goes beyond meetings.
Yep.
And so we know each other. We connect through email and other mechanisms online in other ways.
Yeah. And interesting to say that. Of course, I'm in the Groton Rotary Club. We meet on Tuesdays, which is we're recording this on a Tuesday. And we were talking about when should we start meeting again. And one of our members actually said, how about never? these meetings are more productive. They don't cost me any money for lunch. We get more done. We still connect. We still see each other, and we can still have get-togethers. But, you know, I think we should stay online. This is great, which I don't think we're going to do that. But we may go to a process of in-person twice a week, online twice, or twice a month, online twice a month, or who knows.
I think we're getting about as many people in the online meetings as we did in the in-person meetings. But the value of the inline meetings, online meetings, is better, I think. And we're getting different people. For example, some people, and probably in Groton, some of the people in your club are in Florida now. I mean, they're. And we find that some of those people love to check in on their Rotary Club up north and tease us about how the weather's so horrible, but also find out how things are going and what's going on. And so, I think a combination, and that's what Jeffrey Catterat was saying, a combination of both online and in-person meetings is where we should go and where we're going to be, and allow us. I wanted to talk a little bit about me, you know, who I am.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Who are you, Jack?
So I am a PhD chemist. Okay. Mm-hmm. I worked really my whole career at a company called Praxair. Initially, it was Union Carbide Industrial Gases. So I'm kind of an expert at gases, oxygen, nitrogen, argon, hydrogen.
Oh, wow.
But I also worked a lot with various industries, like the semiconductor industry. I was very involved with the startup of Semitech. I don't know. You probably don't remember that. That was in the 80s.
Okay.
We were afraid that our semiconductor industry was all going to go to Japan. Japan was our. And so we formed this organization called Semitech to develop technology. And I was involved somewhat in that. My wife, Jan, is a physiologist. She taught high school chemistry. We have three adult daughters who are all married, and two of them are right in this area. And we have six grandchildren. And one of our grandchildren actually lives in Mexico, and his wife is pregnant. So we're about in several months to have a great grandchild.
Oh, wow.
So my wife and I own an island in East Hampton. That's really why we're here. It's 5 acres, and we can sleep 39 people on the island. We have 5 cabins. So how do you get to own an island?
I mean, how do you get to own an island?
So I was retiring from Praxair, and we lived in Rye, New York. And we were looking for a summer house. But we would retire. The idea was we'll stay in Rye, New York. We'll retire there. But we'd have a summer house that we could retreat to. So looking on the internet, we found island for sale. Well, who can resist an island? Now my wife says, yeah, I could resist an island, but but no, Jack couldn't resist an island. So we went to see the island, and it was in the middle of a lake in East Hampton, Connecticut, and it was 5 acres and had lots of places to sleep. And so it turned out, and, you know, it seems like it would be unreasonable, but it turned out that an island on a lake in East Hampton, Connecticut, is about an even trade for a house in Rye, New York. You know,
I believe that, yeah.
So we moved to East Hampton, Connecticut, and it's been a great, great move. And I joined Rotary after I came to East Hampton. So, and lots of Rotary events are held on the island. For example, one thing Rotary does is Youth Exchange, which we're not going to be doing in the near future until COVID's gone. But kids go overseas and they come here and live in the other place for a little while. And so they're training. When they come, they need to be trained, and they get trained on the island every year. So that's kind of my history. Do you have any other questions, Mike?
So is the island only accessible by boat, or is there a bridge to it?
No, it's only accessible by boat. That's true.
Does it have electricity and
utilities? Or when we bought the island, there was a cable that went from the shore, and not the shore our property, but the shore of Park, a town park, and went to the island. And so then after, and we had, at times we had problems with that cable. But after a few years, maybe more than a few, 8 years or 9 years, we lost power. And when we investigated, we found out that the cable, this 5,000-volt electrical cable, had been cut by boat props. So when you find your cable, which is going to cost you a lot of money to put back in, has been cut by boat props, you think, well, what's my alternative? And so our alternative was off-the-grid solar. Mm-hmm. So we have a very large battery. We have a large 8 kilowatts of solar, and we're off the grid on the island. Yeah.
And so you live on the island now?
Well, I have a house on the shore, and okay. We have, of course, a lot of places on the island. So we generally hang out on the house on the shore, but we're on the island a lot, especially during the summer. In the winter, you can't live on the island.
I feel like the island very much facilitates social distancing.
It does. And we were there all weekend, all Memorial Day weekend. We were there and we distanced.
Yes. Wow. That is really awesome. I don't know how I had not previously learned you had an island, but I'm glad I did now, because that's really, you are the first person who's been on the Guy Who Knows a Guy podcast who owns an island that I know of.
So, and you can reference it. Its name is Laurel Island.
Ah, okay. I was actually looking on Google Maps here, and that was my guess, because there's not a lot of islands that meet the description.
So at this time of year, it's very special, because it's named Laurel Island because it has a lot of laurels. And laurels are just about to bloom, and they are so pretty. They're so beautiful. The ones on the island are all white. I think they're also floral, but the ones on the island, they're wild. We had a Audubon person walk through the island, and she points at this laurel tree and says, that's over 200 years old, because laurel is very slow growing, and this had this trunk that was gigantic. And so it would have taken that long to grow that laurel.
Wow. Well, I'm very glad that you found that island.
Yeah, I am too.
Because it brought you to our district, so that you can now be our district governor.
Yes.
And you've done a lot of good work for us.
So the island was owned by the Boy Scouts way back in the day.
That's why it's full of boat docks and cabins.
No, it predates all of that. The cabins were all built by the guy I bought it from, except one, and that was built for the camp director, you know, Boy Scout. We have pictures of Boy Scouts on the island in the 30s and 40s.
Wow.
It's really kind of neat. The Scouts all stayed in lean-tos, and they roughed it.
Well, that's a pretty cool thing you found there.
Yeah.
And I would totally believe that it's an even trade for a house in Rye, because there's probably less demand for an island like that, because it's not necessarily practical for commuting to work from and things like that.
Yeah.
So
no, you're right.
Tends to drive down the property value, but then you get to own an island, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, we're not worried about it. You don't need to worry about property value until you're ready to sell.
Yep.
Which we're not going to do. Our daughter is going to inherit it.
Yep. Yep. I get what you're saying there. Yeah. And But you sure did pick an interesting year to be governor.
I did.
I'm sure in July you had no idea what you'd be dealing with coming towards the end of your term.
Right. Aloha, governors.
Yes. Yep. And yeah, 2 years ago when I accepted the presidency for 2020, 2021, I also thought it would just be another ordinary year.
Yes. And you may not, I expect you will not be meeting in person at least until 2021.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I may or may not ever actually stand at a podium with a gavel at my club, but that's okay
you can do that, right?
I'll hold a
virtual.
You can
do that on Zoom.
It's true. Yes.
Get a podium and stand there with a gavel on Zoom.
That's true. I need to put a gavel, a podium in front of my camera and get the whole experience there. So, yeah, but it has been interesting because, once you're forced to do things differently, you discover all kinds of new and exciting ways to do things.
Yep. It is true. Well, in fact, one of our issues is fundraising, mm-hmm. And because clubs, run road races. I don't remember what your club does.
A golf tournament.
Yeah, a golf tournament. Yeah. Although the golf tournament, you could imagine doing socially distanced.
Yeah.
But a lot of these road races and some of these other things, are hard to imagine. Mm-hmm. But we're kind of figuring out how to do them. One thing I'm working on that should be fun, and maybe you'd be interested in, is comedy night.
We're actually working on our virtualizing our comedy night.
Right.
That's our secondary fundraiser.
Yeah. Well, I've been looking at it, and I researched it a little bit and found there's a whole bunch of comedians who would be happy to do your comedy night on Zoom. Mm-hmm. And without charging a lot of money. I mean, you know.
Well, I could imagine because they don't have to travel anywhere. A lot of the comics who were bringing in before from Boston or from New York or something. And an enterprising comic could do 5 shows in one Friday night.
Exactly.
Get paid a couple $100 for each one and do way better than they would if they were driving out to a club. So they just have to get used to the whole camera experience.
Yeah. So one comic said, I'm talking to him. He called me up and he says, well, we have to make sure that the audience is unmuted. And I said, oh, you mean muted, right? Oh, he said, no, unmuted so that I can hear their laughter.
Yep.
It's interesting. It's all different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just. Yeah, and I think there may be some other platforms you can look at as well besides Zoom that let give more sound control, but that'd be or Zoom will expand their resources at some point, which would be nice to
for the expanded. Yeah, I'm not recommending Zoom or anything. I'm hoping that clubs like yours, clubs like yours that have done a comedy night will figure out a way to move forward. And then they can share that information with others.
Yep, we're figuring it out. One thought was a virtual comp. It was a hybrid where you have maybe 20 people in the room, so you get the live laughter feedback, and then the rest are all wherever. So there's a lot of possibilities there. So we're coming to the end of our time, but do you have any final comments?
No. Well, I, as governor, I guess I always should have a final comment, right?
Like it's your job. Where would someone go to learn more?
Kind of expect the unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, kind of my philosophy and the way I've been this year is I have a bias for action, right? I want to do things. So rather than think about things, I like to do things, make things happen. Expect the unexpected, right? Who would have believed that COVID?
Mm-hmm.
And be inquisitive, like my exploration with this comedy night, be inquisitive and be interested in other people. That's a key part of Rotary and the key fun part of being a governor. So thank you very much for this, Mike.
Absolutely. And so if someone's interested in Rotary and doesn't know about it, where should they go to find out more?
Well, we have a website, rotarydistrict7980.org. You can go there. You can go to Rotary International's website, rotary.org, and if you put an inquiry about a local Rotary Club, you want to get in touch with a local Rotary Club, that will actually come to me, and I'll put you in touch with the president of your local club. So there should be lots of ways for you to connect.
And, of course, for anyone in Groton, starting July 1st, I'll be the president of your local club. So
yes,
you can find me.
And just call Mike Whitehouse.
Very, very good. All right. Well, Jack, it's great to have you on the show, and great to learn about your island and everything else. It's been fun. And I'm sure I will see you probably on Zoom again one of these days.
Yes. Thank you, Mike. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Jack has been a great governor in a tumultuous time. While many service and fraternal organizations have faced challenges in attracting and retaining members, Jack Solomon, as district governor, with the help of numerous hardworking and skilled Rotarians, have actually achieved net growth in membership in the district this year, attracting and engaging new members of all ages, including the elusive younger members. If you'd like to learn more about Rotary, you can visit the district website at www.rotarydistrict7980.org. Again, rotarydistrict7980.org. Working with the Groton Rotary and other local clubs, we have been developing a volunteer corps that local nonprofits can call upon as work needs to be done. If your organization would like to promote their volunteer opportunities on our list, let me know at michael@guywhoknowsaguy.com. If you would like to be notified of local volunteer opportunities, visit bit.ly/rotaryresponse. That's bit.ly/rotaryresponse. If you are interested in being more involved directly in Groton Rotary Club, or just want to swing by for a visit, we'd love to have you attend our meeting, which is currently hosted on Zoom every Tuesday at noon. Email me for details. The Guy Who Knows a Guy podcast is produced and hosted by Michael Whitehouse. Our theme song is composed by Patrick Howard of Four Unicorns Design. That nifty sound effect is from Benjamin Harvey Design by way of freesound.org. Special thanks to Pat Helmers of Habanero Media for all the great advice he gave on relaunching the show. Find me on the web at www.guywhoknowsaguy.com. Please subscribe to this podcast and leave a review, because that helps people find us. You can also follow me on Facebook at www.facebook.com/theguywhoknowsaguy. Please share links to this show with friends you think would benefit. Also, when you go to the website, make sure you sign up for the email list. This is Michael Whitehouse, the guy who knows a guy, reminding you that it's not what you know, it's who you know, and how much you're willing to help them. JV Connect is coming up quick, December 12th and 13th. If you are looking for a networking event where you can meet people who aren't looking to just pitch you or take, but actually want to collaborate, build strategic partnerships, joint ventures, maybe even find some mentors, some coaches, people to support you, accountability partners, who knows? If you're looking for good people in an environment that's not stressful, but is set up to give you a lot of great connections in an efficient amount of time, check out JV Connect. jv-connect.com. That's jv-connect.com. December 12th and 13th, 2023. We'll see you there.